What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Chatted Up podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shooter, bringing you interviews, news, and reviews about all things Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I'm going to start this episode a little different than you're used to. There's not going to be any This Day in Upper History segment, because unless you've been living under a rock, obviously you know that we're in the midst of some history, and I just felt compelled to say something. I definitely went back and forth over this decision quite a bit, but it just feels like the right thing to do. So before I say what I'm going to say, I just want to preface this with, this is just my personal opinion, and it's my opinion only. So please don't look into this any deeper than that. This is really just me needing to get this off my chest. So, since this is a UP podcast, I'm going to try and approach this from a UP perspective. We all know that the Upper Peninsula is this wonderful and unique place, and a major part of that identity is our remoteness, right? There's this like awesomeness and almost a romanticism to being cut off from the rest of the world. And we use our sisu and our toughness, to take care of ourselves and take care of our own. But one kind of side effect of that remoteness is the UP really lacks racial diversity. And you could probably have a whole separate discussion on the pros and cons of that. But the fact remains that except for, our Native American tribes that we have here in the UP, we're overwhelmingly made up of white people of European origin. And I guess the point that I'm getting at is most of us only get the perspective of these protests and riots that are going on from a 1,000-mile wide view. We're not immersed within communities and neighborhoods that have racial issues as a part of our daily lives. And there's no one single person to blame for that, but at the same time, that's also like kind of the definition of white privilege. Upers by and large, and myself included in that, we all have difficulties and struggles and problems in our daily lives, but the color of our skin isn't one of them. And that's just a fact. And because of that, it essentially makes it impossible to have sympathy for what's going on, because the definition of sympathy is having a shared feeling. And you can't share a feeling with someone about something that you've never experienced yourself. So I feel like if we can't sympathize, then we need to empathize. And empathy comes from understanding. And the only way that that can really happen is by listening to other people and figuratively, walking a mile in that person's shoes. So I'm sure some of you listening to this are thinking, why? The UP is this nice and quiet place, so, why not just stay silent? It'd be easy to take the "it's not my problem" approach. So why in our right mind would we involve ourselves in civil rights matters and issues? To me, the short and simple answer is it's just the right thing to do. But, if you think about it, Upers are also kind of known for helping people in a time of need. You know, there's so many stories of, you know, someone stranded on the side of the highway somewhere in the UP, or maybe they're in some sort of other odd pickle, and, you know, a local, a Uper, shows up and just helps them with unbelievable generosity and kindness. And, you know, that type of thing happens so often that someone actually wrote a book about it. They compiled a bunch of stories of that happening and wrote a book about it. But, you know, also, if, you know, if we're going to take the kid gloves off and be real and be honest, you know, about this situation, you know, as far as racial matters go, the UP could probably use some work in that area too. I mean, if you take one look at the comment section for TV6's Facebook page, you're going to see more than your fair share of things that, you know, are going to make you not only raise your eyebrows, but you really begin to question the values of some of the people that are here in our communities. And, you know, some of those people probably just don't want to change. They've got no desire to. But the optimist in me feels like there are more people out there that probably just don't know any better. You know, for a lot of the things that I just talked about, as far as the remoteness and just not having it a part of their daily life. So, you know, that kind of leads me to my next question of how. How can people in the Upper Peninsula make a difference? And, you know, it seems like just such a daunting task. Like, where do you even start? But there's a lot of different ways that you can make a difference. And first and foremost, you need to vote. And I think that just goes without saying. Voting by far is the best way to make your voice heard. And, you know, just try and remember that, you know, whether it's left wing or right wing, you know, both wings are on the same bird, so to speak. The next one to me that's just as important is educating yourself. And in my opinion, honestly, that means turning off CNN or Fox or whatever major network you get your news from. And it definitely means getting the hell off of social media. When I say educate yourself, I mean read articles, read literature, watch documentaries, you know, listen to podcasts, have a conversation with somebody, you know, of somebody of a different race or a different background than you. I guess the point I'm trying to make is try and find things that show you a different perspective or point of view than your own. Since all of this has happened, that's been kind of like my number one main thing in all of this. I'll be the first to admit that I'm how naive I am, and just having a lack of understanding of all sides of the issue. And I've just been trying to soak up as much information as possible. And I think it really goes back to what I said earlier about empathy. Because reading and watching and listening to these types of things is the best way to try and put yourself in someone else's shoes. And also, knowledge is power. You know, so the more educated we can be on all sides of an issue, then the more equipped we are to try and address and solve these issues. I'll definitely be sharing on my Instagram page some of the things that, like I said, that I've watched or I've read or I've listened to in the last 2 weeks that I've found helpful, that I've enjoyed. Another way you can help is by donating. You know, there are many worthy causes out there that are fighting the good fight, and they need all the help they can get. So I'll be sharing that on my Instagram page too, as to different ways that you can donate if you feel so inclined. Getting involved civically is another great way. There are so many volunteer and service organizations that need help, and a lot of these are right in our backyards. So that's one way that you really can make a difference, because, you know, at the end of the day, it starts in our own communities and it grows from there. That's the only way that this happens, is, you know, a grassroots effort, for lack of a better term. You know, and if getting out and protesting and using your voice is your thing, obviously there is a lot of that going on right now too. You know, that's your right as an American. In my personal opinion, I would say keep things peaceful. I'm sure some people have different opinions on that, but my opinion is always keep things peaceful and respectful. Lastly, just be kind to everybody that you encounter. You know, the news would lead you to believe that there's like this line drawn in the sand, and it's us versus M, and there's just no other way. But that's just not true. You know, it's possible to love and support your family, your friends, your neighbors, people of color, law enforcement, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, you know, you name it. It's possible to love and support all of those people despite having differences. And I know that that's possible because I fall into that category. And you know what? Those differences are a good thing, because that variety, that's the spice of life. That's what makes us us. So if anything, I welcome the differences. But what's important is how we respond to and acknowledge those differences. And at the end of the day, you know, it's a corny and it's a cliche, but we're all in this together. So, you know, since all of this happened, I feel like I've gone through like every single emotion that a human could possibly go through. And really, at the end of the day, I keep coming back to love. And it's probably, I don't want to say it's serendipitous, but it's very fitting that this episode I'm talking with a priest, because I believe with everything inside of me, sorry, I believe very strongly that faith, hope, and love it's what's going to get us through these tough times. So please just be kind to one another and spread love. And that's really all I have to say about this. You know, I don't know whether people are going to agree or disagree with what I have to say. But like I said, I just really felt like I had to say something. And so I'm putting this out there into the world. So, okay. So this week's interview is with Father Brad Schoquist. And Father Brad is a Catholic priest with the Diocese of Marquette, and I've known him for most of my life, I would actually say. Just for context, he and I sat down before all of this this stuff happened. Otherwise, we probably would have discussed it, I think. But so just keep that in mind, like I said, as far as the context of this interview. So, you know, he's got a really great story to tell, and I've definitely done enough talking, so I'm going to just shut up now. So without further ado, let's chat it up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with Father Brad Schoquist. Brad, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yeah. So you and I, we grew up right around the same time in Kingsford. When you think back on your time growing up here, what are some kind of big memories that stand out to you?
Yeah, growing up in Kingsford, you know, I grew up in the Ford Edition, so not far from Kingsford High School. So, you know, we used to play in the park that's kind of there. We used to call it the tire park because they had like these giant tires that you crawled through that eventually got taken down when I was, I don't know, probably in elementary school sometime. Yeah. But yeah, just kind of had a pretty normal childhood, walked to Kingsford Middle School, you know, when I went there and walked to high school until I could drive. And then I drove, even though it was just you know, 2 minutes away.
The famous Ford Edition, a lot of history there with the old Ford plant and being workers' houses. And there's a lot of kind of neat history in that part of town. So it's definitely very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. My mom loves remodeling our house. So at one point we found that all the floorboards were stamped Ford Motor Company.
Oh man, that's so cool.
The houses there were built for Ford auto workers. So
I'm a huge history buff, so that type of stuff totally interests me. Mm-hmm. But so besides, you know, being from the same town, you also ended up going to the same university as me. You ended up heading to Central Michigan University. What was it that kind of led you down to CMU? Were you like just looking to get out of the UP, or I guess what brought you there?
Yeah. You know, I think I wanted to get a little farther from home, not to necessarily just get out of the UP, but, just to kind of spread my wings a little bit. I ended up going to Central mainly because I got a good scholarship to go there.
Oh, perfect.
That was kind of the main determining factor for that. And, you know, I think for me, Central was a good choice. It was like the perfect size. You know, there are all these people from Southeast Michigan and Metro Detroit that were like, there's nothing to do in Mount Pleasant. This is such a small town. And I got there and I was like, there's so much to do here.
Right. That's how I felt too. I'm like, it's got a big school feel, but you can like get from one side of campus to the other in like 10 minutes. Like, you know, so I felt the exact same way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know when you were there, you ended up studying philosophy. I mean, was that the plan all along, or did you just kind of find that over time?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I double majored in Spanish and psychology, but minored in philosophy.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
So that was kind of, I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. So I'd been thinking a little bit about seminary. I was thinking about law school. I kind of just started taking classes, and that's kind of what I ended up with for my undergrad.
So when you mentioned you were kind of thinking about seminary, so joining the priesthood, that's been something that's kind of been was at least at that time was something that was kind of on the back of your mind?
Yeah, certainly it was. So, you know, I probably started thinking about it in middle school. You know, I think at that time in my life, I just had a lot of questions. And one day I remember kind of thinking to myself, well, you know, either all of this is true or it's not. And if it's not true, why am I going to church? And if it is true, it is like really important. So, you know, I started doing kind of a lot of reading, just kind of randomly kind of Googling stuff. And I realized there were, you know, a lot of people out there that had thought about these things at a much deeper level than I ever had.
Sure.
You know, eventually became just sort of really kind of subjectively kind of convinced about the kind of the truth of Christianity, that it made sense to me. And in high school, really kind of really invested in it, kind of just seeing my own, I guess, just like personal need for a savior that I found in Jesus. And that was, you know, a great blessing for me. But yeah, so I started thinking about it a lot in high school. And then when I got to college, I got super involved in the campus ministry there, the Catholic Church St. Mary's on campus.
Yep.
Particularly my sophomore through senior year. And that was probably I just did so much there, and it gave me so much life. And I was pretty involved on campus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I was pretty involved in student government, actually. Mm-hmm. So I actually ran for vice president of the student body at Central my my senior year.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. So I usually pride myself on doing some good kind of researching and digging, and that's something I did not know.
No, I did. But, you know, I remember when I was campaigning for that, because apparently we had to campaign, I was giving a speech, and I remember thinking, you know, for as hard as I've worked in this, for as much as I've worked in kind of all these other campus organizations, you know, nothing gives me life like the stuff I was doing kind of in the campus ministry. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I'd much rather be talking to my peers about kind of these more important things. And that was kind of one of the turning points where I was like, okay, I have to really give this a shot and think about this at a deeper level about possibly becoming a priest.
That's super interesting. I mean, you hear some people, you know, talking about like they may get a calling, you know, and you don't know when that might happen. But for you to kind of say, you know, it kind of gradually built over time. Was there any sort of like, okay, this is like, I know this is what I want to do. Was there like one moment that really solidified that for you?
You know, there really wasn't one moment. I think it really was almost more than anything else, kind of this understanding that I'd never really have peace in my life unless sure. I gave it a shot.
Okay.
Because it was just like on my mind so much.
Yeah. So, okay. So you make that decision. I'm assuming, do you have to like apply for seminary school, or what goes into that?
Yes, that's a great question. That's, you know, it's, yes, you do have to apply. It's kind of a long process. So I entered seminary right out of college. And the first thing you do, so to be a diocesan priest like I am, mm-hmm. The first thing you need to do is find a diocese to sponsor you, which sure. is kind of, you know, a region of the world, basically. And that's right. kind of the diocese you're attached to. So I'm attached to the Diocese of Marquette, Michigan. So they have an application process. You do, you know, interviews. You do you have to get a physical to make sure you're physically healthy enough. You do a psychological sure. exam. You do all these references. They look at your employment history, your academic history, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, they decide to accept you. And then you're sent to a seminary that does kind of the rest of your formation, they call it. So education is part of it, but it's only kind of, the classes are only part of it. So you're living in community, you're participating in the prayer life of the community, you're doing kind of these pastoral sorts of outreaches, you're you know, teaching, you're going to hospitals, you're doing these kinds of things. You know, and kind of all along the way, you're being evaluated.
Sure.
So, you know, particularly in the beginning, and you're really kind of asking the question, is God calling me to this? And then kind of the seminary faculty is looking at you and they're saying, okay, is this person a good candidate? Can he live this life?
Sure.
And so it's sort of a back and forth process. It's not necessarily adversarial, right? But
right.
you know, it's a lot of growth and self-knowledge and kind of the way you sort of relate to people and all that sort of stuff.
That's super interesting to me. Just being completely naive to the process, when I just hear the word seminary, I'm picturing like sitting and studying scripture. And obviously there's so much more that goes into it from what you're telling me. So it honestly, it sounds like it's probably a pretty intense experience.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an intense experience. So it's not, it's probably more like joining the military than it is like going to college or going to mm-hmm. graduate school. So the academics definitely take up a lot of time, but you know, you're also doing evaluations and kind of being, you know, talking with people about, you know, how you relate to people, what are strengths, weaknesses, and trying to kind of work through some of those things.
Sure. It, that makes total sense to me. Cause I mean, if you just think about it, if you're going to be out there, you know, with the people, you're going to, when you said that kind of back and forth, that's going to just be natural, a natural, you know, kind of comes with the territory. So mm-hmm. That totally makes sense to me. Now your seminary was down in Detroit, correct?
It was. Yep. Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, Michigan.
Is that a relatively like big school? I mean, how many other people were going through seminary with you?
So that's a good question. So when I was there, I think we had around 120 seminarians who were studying for the priesthood. And then the seminary also had a number of students that weren't studying to be priests, but were studying to get degrees to do other jobs in the church. So I want to say they probably had like another 500 or so commuter students.
Okay. Now, you know, just comparing it to college, let's just say 4 years, how long typically does like seminary take?
So seminary in the United States generally takes 6 to 8 years.
Wow.
So if you have a bachelor's degree going in, it's about a 6 year minimum these days. If you don't have a bachelor's degree going in, it's 8.
Wow.
So yeah. So the first, for me, 2 years, were dedicated to philosophy. So doing a lot more study of philosophy. And then the last 4 were pretty heavy theology.
Okay. Very interesting. Now, so once you kind of, you go through your 6 years, is there like a next step before you become a priest or you're ordained, or like what's next after you complete seminary?
Yep. So that's pretty much it. So along the way, you'll be in the Catholic Church, at least, right? You're ordained a deacon first.
Okay.
And that's when you make kind of the promises of celibacy and some of the other ones, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of the, and then that, usually you're a deacon for about a year, and then you're ordained a priest after that. So yeah, it's pretty much, so my graduation from seminary felt pretty anticlimactic. It was like, okay. And then I had the ordination, which was kind of the bigger sort of event.
Sure. So when were you ordained? Like around what time, just to kind of put a time frame on it?
So it was actually May 29th, 2015. So
okay,
tomorrow is my 5 year anniversary.
Wow. What, I did not plan to be right on your anniversary of that, but that's really great. I just saw that you posted on your social media that you were just baptized, or your anniversary of your baptism was just really close to that too. So, yep. So what went in then to you, like being ordained? What's that process like when you said there's more kind of, it's a more bigger to do?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's in a sense kind of like a wedding, right? It's a big ceremony at the cathedral in Marquette. So the bishop mm-hmm. ordains you. Sort of kind of the ancient gesture for that is the laying on of hands. So he puts his hands on your head and, says this prayer. That's kind of your ordination. You're kind of becoming a priest at that moment. And then, from there you get to work.
You get to work. So do they like assign you to like a church or a parish, or like, I guess what goes into that process as far as where you end up getting, they send you somewhere essentially, correct?
Yep, absolutely. So,
okay.
The bishop pretty much has kind of the freedom to assign us wherever he wants. Now every year I get a questionnaire that says, are you happy in your assignment? Would you like a transfer? What kind of a parish would you be interested in? Those kinds of things. So it is a conversation. They don't just usually randomly move you. And it often just depends on kind of where there's a need. Usually sure. These days you start off as an associate pastor or an assistant priest. So you're not maybe in charge of all of the administration. You're not necessarily hiring staff members, doing their evaluations, those kinds of things, but you're still, preaching, saying mass, hearing confessions, kind of doing the whole thing. So I spent the first 3 years of my priesthood in Menominee,
Michigan. Oh, okay. So not too, too far from home.
No, it was a little bit of a hard psychological leap for me to be a Maroon.
That's great. I was not expecting you to say that.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. The old rivalries certainly run deep.
Yeah. No, I'd go to Menominee High School sporting events, and I'd see my parishioners playing and in the games, and you want them to do well, but it's Menominee.
I can imagine. So how did the opportunity come about for you to be able to study in Rome?
So one day, the bishop said, "Father Brad, can I talk to you?" And I said, "Yes." And I thought, what did I do? Am I in trouble? And he said, he just said, you know, I've been, I'd like to send you to go on to get a doctorate in theology. He said, you know, I know you like school. I know you've kind of done that, you know, for a while, but, and I'd like you to get this extra education. Is that something you're willing to do? I said, yeah, Bishop, you know, I like school. You know, if you think it would be helpful for the church up here to have a priest with a little bit more training, I'm happy to do it. And he said, you know, I think it'll be a good plan. He said, I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to have you do with it, but I think it'll be a good thing for the future. So we looked at programs, and that kind of Rome seemed to be about as good as any place to kind of do this. So
you basically picked kind of the program you wanted to do, and they just, they send you, like, so you're right in the Vatican, essentially. I mean, so I guess what was the program about?
Yep. So I'm studying a particular kind of branch of theology called moral theology. So it's all about kind of the moral life. It's about human action.
Sure.
You know, I would say it's about human flourishing kind of in the deepest sense. But, you know, so there are different programs kind of all over the world. A lot of priests study in Rome. The system over there is a little bit faster than it is in the United States. So if I were to do this program in the U.S., it would be really hard to do it in under 4 years. Mm-hmm. But there it's, I think, very doable.
Okay.
So that's kind of one. And then also the experience of language and culture and kind of getting a more global perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm in classes with people from, you know, China, India, Sri Lanka, Africa, Spain, Latin America.
Wow. So have you, I mean, obviously I know you're very fluent in Spanish, so you probably have been able to show that off a little bit. Have you picked up any Italian or any other like languages or anything?
Yeah, my Italian's, or my Spanish has like been destroyed by Italian. Because they're so similar. But yeah, my Italian is passable. It's okay. Not excellent, but my courses are all in Italian, so I have to be able to understand it. And
yeah. At least do you have to write in Italian too, or are you able to just write in English?
Thankfully, most of the professors read English.
Okay.
So, like for the big thesis and stuff, I can write it in English.
Sure. So this past December, you had the incredible honor of being able to meet Pope Francis. Can you tell me how this all came about?
Sure. Yeah. So that was, so every like 5 years or so, every bishop in the world has to go to Rome to render an account of his ministry to the Pope. And so it was the United States' turn this year. And so when our bishop was over there, the bishops of Michigan and Ohio met with the Pope together for about 2 hours one day. And I was able to, because I was over there, our bishop took me in with him. So I was only able to, I basically just shook the Pope's hand, and then he like talked to all the priests that had to leave and said, you know, it's good that you're here. It's good to see you. He's like, now you have to wait until the bishops are done with their meeting. and then he sent us away.
Well, and I'm sure he's got a pretty like rigid, strict schedule that he's got to keep to, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. And he met with them for like 2 hours and they talked about all kinds of stuff. But but yeah, it was great that I was able to at least go and, you know, say hello and shake his hand.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, that's an incredible honor. I mean, is there like, does he have like a lot of security around him? Or I mean, I'm curious, to, you know, obviously, because I'm super naive to the situation, but.
Yeah, you know, security in Italy, I don't necessarily always understand it. some of the stuff is like really strict and then other stuff isn't. So for this, and I think we were just bussed over there. So I got on a bus with the bishops, and then the buses just drove right into the Vatican.
Sure.
So they drove right into Vatican City. We got out and then we just got in the elevator and went and met him, we didn't have any real security to go through.
Wow. I guess if there's any people that you assume are trustworthy, you and your group that you were with are probably pretty high on that list.
Well, I think I think under other circumstances, they do make you go through security, but I think they just assumed since it was an official visit, they weren't going to make us go through metal detectors and stuff.
Sure, sure. With your studies, do you get to go into Vatican City quite often, or is it mostly just kind of centered in Rome?
Yeah, so it's mostly Rome. You know, every time I go to the Vatican, I think I have to like psychologically brace myself for it because there are just so many tourists.
Sure.
It's a little bit of a process. So, and you know, the Vatican really is St. Peter's Basilica, right?
Right.
Or like a couple other things that you can go see, but you know, by and large, I don't have a ton of business there. So,
sure.
You know, unless I'm going to St. Peter's, I don't usually get over there too much.
Has it been an adjustment, like living in Rome, like that big of a city compared to obviously like Menominee?
Yeah. So, yes, that was an adjustment, just dealing with crowds and, you know, I live in central Rome, which is great, but it's, you know, you're just always kind of fighting through tourists and all those kinds of things to get from point A to point B.
Sure. I'm assuming besides just obviously your studies, you're kind of obviously able to get out and explore a bit. What have been some of your like enjoyable experiences that you've had while you've been there, besides obviously, you know, the ones we've already talked about?
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel really blessed to be over there. One of the things that I get to do that I love is I'm a part-time chaplain for an American study abroad program.
Oh, so, okay.
University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. I help out with their Rome program. So I do chaplaincy work with them once or twice a week. So it's been good, but you know, around Rome, you know, I get to see, you know, the Colosseum, you know, down the street. The Circus Maximus isn't too far. I walk around there quite a bit. You've had a couple opportunities to travel in Europe a little bit because it's, you know, everything's so close. So
yeah.
Went to Slovenia once for a weekend.
Okay.
You know, in Sweden once for a weekend. you know, just to see some different places.
So you grew up here surrounded by Italian food. How does it compare to the motherland?
You know, it's interesting. I had a grandma who, my great grandmother was, I think, mostly Austrian and German. But she grew up on the north side of Iron Mountain.
Yeah.
So she always would make us like this Italian food. And like occasionally I'll eat something somewhere and I'll be like, this tastes like my grandmother's spaghetti sauce. Like I'll think that to myself. You know, I would say the food over there is different than the Italian food in Iron Mountain.
Right.
In a lot of ways. But occasionally there'll be like a flavor that just kind of reminds me of something from my great grandma.
I can imagine. I just think that's funny. But so while you're over there, you know, because you were just there up until recently, obviously this whole coronavirus pandemic hits. So you're still kind of like over there in the middle of classes. I mean, what was it like dealing with that? Was it, did they come up with a plan to get you back home, or I guess what happened when everything started occurring?
Yes, that was an adventure. Yeah, because stuff in Italy sort of blew up before it did in the United States.
Right.
So, you know, I want to say our stay-at-home order was early March, like maybe March 4th. And we didn't really have, you know, any clue what this was. It was like there was a new decree from the prime minister every day, just kind of gradually shutting more and more stuff down. And, you know, so a lot of guys left, a lot of guys left early. I was going to stick it out, and the place where I'm staying, it's a house of about 75 priests, kind of like a big dorm, mostly Americans. And they said, you know, we were planning on staying open. And then as more and more stuff closed, they said, okay, we need to close down. You all have to leave. So I was there for like 3 weeks of the lockdown order in Italy. And then I just had to fly home and then do the 2 week quarantine. And I think the day I arrived in Michigan was the day Michigan's stay at home order started.
Wow. Was it tough actually like getting back into the United States and getting home, or was it pretty smooth?
No, at that time there was still one flight from Rome to New York.
Okay.
That we took, and then they took your temperature on the jet bridge and then gave you a little card and took your information. Okay. So I quarantined with a friend downstate actually.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is where did you do this 14-day quarantine?
Yeah, so I have a friend of mine who's a priest down in the Lansing area, and he had a place where we could stay, so we spent 2 weeks there. But while we were there, a public health nurse called us and wanted us to check in every day to make sure that neither of us developed symptoms and all of that. So I spent 2 weeks there and then flew from Detroit to Iron Mountain. There was one other person on the plane.
Wow. So you you were able to properly social distance.
That was no problem.
So I guess what else have you been doing then during the quarantine to kind of like pass the time here?
Yeah, so I'm still in school.
Okay. So you're still actively doing like virtual learning.
Yeah. So our semester, our school year is a little bit shifted from the year in the United States. So my semester goes till mid-June. So yep, I'm still doing that. And a lot of my work right now is research and writing. So that's just my life and is going to be ongoing through the summer. So Marquette and helping out in parishes on the weekends. But other than that, just working on school.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I know when we were talking in trying to set this up, you had mentioned that you were possibly going to be teaching some classes up in Houghton too.
Yeah, so this is just kind of a side project. So there's a group of college students that are going to do some work this summer. I'm just going to give like 12 hours lessons to them. So nothing gotcha. Super official, but just some other kind of priestly help out stuff.
Sure. So is the game plan to eventually head back to Rome at some point? I mean, once things clear up?
Yep. So I have 2 more years on my kind of left in this program. So I have a ticket for September 17th. Hopefully that flight still exists in September, but you know, plan on going back and giving it another try.
Sure. You mentioned you've been helping out a little bit around, you know, local parishes or just doing some things here and there within the diocese. It's my understanding they're starting to kind of open some churches back up, correct?
Yep. Yeah. So we opened churches, I think last weekend or the weekend before. I think last weekend was the first weekend we were.
Yeah.
Open. Yeah. So actually I haven't been doing too much of that yet because we've been locked down, but, you know, that should pick up kind of into the rest of the summer.
Yeah. I had gotten a letter from Father Mike, and for those listening in, Brad and I have the same home parish.
We do. Yep.
So I got a letter from Father Mike, and I wasn't sure if all churches were going to kind of follow the same suit, or if some are just kind of going with what works for them, or how that whole plan was laid out. So,
yeah. For us in for the Catholic churches in the UP, the bishop said we could open last weekend, but it kind of depended on your local resources and set up. Like each pastor kind of had to look at their church and see what would work to kind of keep people distanced and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I know the bishop granted a dispensation to everybody, and I definitely want to get back. It's going to be strange. I know with the rules, I kind of feel like I have to kind of get over the fear and just go, but, and it'll definitely be interesting with the spacing rules and everything. Have you seen any of that or experienced any of that yet at all, or no?
Yeah, I've helped out a little bit here in Marquette, and yeah, it is. It's just weird because everyone's spaced out, and when we distribute communion, we have to wear a mask and those kinds of things. even just thinking as a priest, like, okay, when do I need to wash my hands or use hand sanitizer, those kinds of things to kind of limit the possible spread of disease. So you're just kind of thinking about, you know, how to make that work well.
Sure. Sure. I want to talk to you a little bit about just kind of at least your experiences as a priest thus far. Cause obviously, you know, you're a younger priest, and I think the majority of people, if you had tell them to close their eyes and you say picture a priest, they're probably thinking an older man, maybe with a, you know, a beard or glasses, you know, that type of thing. What's your experience been like as being, you know, one of the younger priests out there?
Yeah, it's funny. That is something that people say a lot. Sometimes when people say, "Oh, you're so young, Father," I want to say, "Well, you're so old." But didn't think that would go very well.
Probably not.
But no, it is a good, it's great. I love being a priest. You know, I feel like I just get to do so many different things and be with people in so many, kind of different, like, significant moments in their lives. I really do love it. Being in school is kind of rough right now because I don't get to do, you know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, I wanted to do when I became a priest, but you know, it has just been a good life. And I think, you know, as a younger priest, I do find, you know, especially talking to people our age and stuff, I think sometimes, and even, you know, a little bit younger, I've just appreciated having someone a little bit more, I think, in their demographic.
Sure.
To kind of, you know, talk to sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. The naysayers of the world out there, you know, would say a lot of stuff is outdated or old fashioned. So, you know, having a younger face and being able to maybe put a younger point of view or a spin on it, I think would certainly help appeal to a younger generation. Are there any other kind of things that our diocese or maybe the Catholic Church are doing to kind of continue to appeal to a younger audience?
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of that just kind of depends on where you are.
Sure.
Right? You know, UP is a big place. So, you know, I do think, like, for a lot of young adults, especially, you know, you get out of college, you move to some place and have a job, and then all of a sudden it becomes, like, kind of hard to meet new people. You know, I think it's a pretty common experience with, you know, a lot of people in their mid to late 20s and early
30s. Big time, for sure. Yeah.
You know, it's a big thing. And, you know, there are, in my experience, right, there are people, like in church, for example, there are people in our age demographic very often that are there, but sometimes those connections just aren't made, you know, and people just don't, like, introduce themselves even, or those kinds of things. And, you know, I think as society does become a little bit more fragmented and these kinds of things, you know, there really are a lot of opportunities for connection that, you know, can kind of come up in those contexts. And I know when I was in the parish, I used to try to work hard at, like, looking at young adults that were there and say, "Oh, you should meet this person." And just kind of foster that. And I think that's been, you know, good and important and something we should probably do more of.
Yeah, I think that's really great. As somebody that's you know, a pretty devout follower, I don't miss Mass very often. I routinely have found myself looking around, and a lot of times I'm the youngest person there by quite a few years, except for maybe one or two other people. And like you said, you don't get that connection of going over and maybe saying hi to somebody or getting to know somebody, where, you know, if you establish those connections, it certainly would probably help foster that a little bit better. So I can really relate to what you're saying. The other thing I keep thinking of, as well as we're kind of, you know, talking about this topic, is Youth Encounter growing up in the UP. You know, that played a really big role in developing my faith and continuing my faith into my, I won't say my later adult years, because I'm not that old. I don't want to date myself too much, but you know, going to Mary Grove, the retreat center was just, like I said, it played a really big role for me. So I just keep thinking of things like that as well. Are they still doing Youth Encounter, even though Mary Grove has unfortunately closed?
Yeah, they are, in fact, still doing Youth Encounter. And yeah, that was a big part of my life. You know, I was very involved in that, had a great experience in that. And yeah, that's I think going strong. I think they did the last one at Fortune Lake.
Oh, okay.
Camp. So they did it up there, I think just before the state locked down with the coronavirus stuff. But yeah, that's they found a way to kind of repurpose it and do it somewhere else. And I think it's going really well. They have a website now.
Oh, okay.
youthencounter906.org or something.
Okay.
Something like that. But yeah, no, it's going well.
Didn't another website recently launch, like Youper Catholic or something along those lines?
It did. And I wish I could tell you more about it. But yeah, I think it is kind of another diocesan sort of outreach to people. I think one of the things, especially in the pandemic, that we've noticed is that having some kind of online presence and way of communicating with people is very important.
Yes.
Not every parish was maybe quite as set up for that as others were. So I'm guessing this has kind of been in the works for a while, but you know, I think it's just another opportunity to share media, share content, and you know, add some more kind of local flavor to some of the really good Catholic content that's out there on the internet. There's a lot of really good things being produced on YouTube and other things that sometimes I think can be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just helps bridge that gap. I mean, you talked a little bit earlier about how big the UP is. I mean, we're spread out all over the place, and to get to all those far reaches across the UP isn't always exactly an easy thing. So to kind of have, you know, one spot where you can really kind of do that for, you know, people following their faith and, you know, living their faith, I think that that's really great. Speaking of that, I would imagine that as you've kind of traveled around the UP to different places with, you know, doing things for the diocese, it's got to be kind of an interesting way to kind of see the UP that probably most people don't get to experience.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. You know, like I think last summer I had Mass in Ewan, I had Mass in Berglund, Ontonagon, Rockland, and that's actually one priest actually takes care of all of those churches right now.
Wow. Okay.
I know it's a huge area, but yeah, no, very different communities, interesting little, you know, small churches. You know, Houghton, you have the campus parish, Houghton Chassel. I was up there.
Ever been able to do the ice mass?
I've never done the ice mass. No.
I want to go. Every year I keep saying I'm going to go up for it, and I haven't yet, but that's definitely on my bucket list. I want to check off.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to deal with the cold.
You were saying you went over to the Sioux as well?
Yep. I was in the Sioux last summer.
Okay. So you're really kind of hitting just about all ends pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, just as they need me. That's my current summer help out schedule.
Perfect. Well, Brad, we've pretty much kind of hit all of the boxes that I kind of had that I wanted to really kind of chat with you about. Is there anything else that you wanted to add or anything like that?
You know, the only thing I'd say, Scott, is you know, I think I discovered your podcast last year at some point. And you know, I'd say I was probably had been in Italy for like 4 or 5 months at that point, and was just kind of like really missing the UP. And I think I saw you interviewed Brandon Urkula.
Yep.
And I was like, Scott Redinger is interviewing Brandon Urkula. I need to listen to this. And as I was, you guys were talking about like, you know, playing as kids in the Heights, it really like made me like helped with my homesickness. I was like, oh, that, good taste of home right there. So I really would appreciate it.
How thick did the accent sound?
It did actually sound pretty thick to me at that point.
My fiance Patty, bless her heart, she's from originally down near Detroit, and even though she's lived up in the UP for quite some time, she's still all the time, she's like, you have such an accent, and I don't hear it, obviously, but so she kind of will poke fun at my accent every now and then when my Uper slang gets real thick. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I when I'm living here, I don't usually hear it, but when I've been living somewhere else for a while, it comes out a little bit stronger when I'm talking to like my parents or, you know, other people sometimes.
Did any of the priests in Rome say that you had an accent?
Just certain words. Like whenever I say beg.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna find me for that. Oh, that's really funny. I know you mentioned, you know, some of them are from all over the world. Do they know like where the UP is or what the UP is when you like tell them where you're from?
Oh man, there was a guy from New York last year that I made read the Wikipedia article about the Upper Peninsula. Because he asked me one day, because our diocese is the whole UP, right? And he said, so Brad, does your diocese border the United States? And I said, yes, and it is part of the United States, in fact.
Wow.
So yeah, we get some things. But I've been a good, I've educated many people about the Upper Peninsula of Michigan since being over there.
That's very, very cool. So I guess I'll just kind of end things here with the question that I ask everybody, and you've listened to the podcast, you know the question. So how do you like your pasty?
I like my pasty plain.
Plain? No nothing?
Well, I usually add a lot of salt.
Okay.
I love salt on pasties. Like, they never have enough on it for me, so I always do that. But I'm not a big ketchup guy.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I mean, you probably were getting bad cravings over there when you're missing home. I mean, they're not readily available, I'm guessing. No,
they are not readily available.
Although, I've had this discussion before where a calzone is just basically an Italian pasty. So
it's, yeah, they're different.
Yeah, they are, but.
But yes, it is basically Italian pasty.
Well, Father Brad, I thank you very much for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. This has been a lot of fun catching up with you because I haven't, you know, talked to you in quite some time, probably since the last time you said mass at St. Mary's. So this was, like I said, it was really great catching up. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for this episode. Another huge thank you to Father Brad for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. I haven't seen him in quite some time, so it was definitely great to be able to sit down and catch up a little bit. Time for the usual housekeeping. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or you just want to chat, feel free to drop me a line at chatituppod@gmail.com. Otherwise, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on YouTube. Just type in Chat It Up Podcast and you should be able to find it. And as always, wherever you are listening in, please subscribe, rate, and leave me a review. You know, that's how the podcast grows, and that's how, you know, we can continue to make this happen. So, as always, thank you all very, very much for listening in. Please be well, be kind, and take care of yourselves and take care of one another. So, as always, I'm your host, Shooter, reminding you to keep your chin up and your eyes forward.